And I would say, as an additional tip, the opposite of that is hiring someone from a hobby that is not necessarily positive. Like hiring your drinking buddy, I do not advise that. It's like
Exactly.
you may think that you have like a friendship with this person because like you see him in this bar and you drink and you have a good time, but that doesn't really speak to their work ethic.
Entrepreneurs love talking about business. However, it's no secret there's also so many things they love talking about which are not about business. In the Sea of Business podcasts, none of your business is a refreshing break, a surprise kiss, an afternoon fizz. Through Carla Singson's cheeky and radical takes on mundane and principle-heavy topics, you'll gain insights that guarantee you something to talk about on your first Tinder date, while visiting grandma, or if you want to impress your new boss. Big thanks to Proximity Outsourcing for sponsoring this episode. Outsource the most tedious tasks in your business, such as data management, appointment setting, and creatives, for less than $12 an hour, fully managed. Visit ProximityOutsourcing.com for more info. Tired of business podcasts? Tune in to None of Your Business. New episodes weekly.
All right, good morning. Welcome to another episode of None of Your Business. And today is actually not super none of your business. Some of your business, probably majority of your business, will benefit from this conversation. But of course, keeping in line with our theme, we're going to talk about something that is not commonly talked about. And today we are going to discuss 10 uncanny ways to get amazing hires. So in my business, in outsourcing and in recruitment, I always say that any entrepreneur can be a natural salesperson or a natural born leader. You know, if they are the eldest child of their family, they could have a natural gift of gab, natural this, natural that. But in my experience, no one is really what you call a natural recruiter. No one is a natural hirer. No one is naturally good at human resources. It is something that you have to build and develop and learn as you go through your career. And let me tell you guys, my first hires were not very good. I think I hired my first executive assistant like 3 times. I had that position 3 times because I was not that good in finding these people, managing these people, motivating these people. And so for today, I chose a very special guest to sit with me in this topic. And he also belongs to a pretty interesting industry. So he is the current owner of barbelljobs.com. It's an online job board for the fitness industry. He acquired this site in 2023. Following his previous experience as a brick and mortar fitness studio owner, I'm going to try not to ask for fitness advice on this podcast. Despite growing the location to the number one in Colorado and top 20 in the country, hiring talent was consistently one of his and one of the fitness industry's biggest challenges. He is really passionate about small business and is.
Recruiter and so forth.
Yeah, I like that. So it is obviously like an industry that is not very familiar to me, even though I've only dealt with it like hiring fitness coaches. But I'm really curious. Have you hired for positions for other industries? And what is the extra challenge when it comes to hiring for the fitness industry? It's like, do you need to weigh them, or do they have to be a certain muscle fat percentage?
Yeah, that doesn't go into my application process at all, actually. It's kind of self-selecting in a way. But I will say that the fitness industry is notorious for having labor challenges for a couple of reasons. That number one, it's a lot of part-time labor. So it's a lot of hourly labor. Like instructors will teach a couple classes per week because they have a full-time job, they have other commitments. So basically kind of teaching classes becomes kind of like priority number three or four for them. So that makes it challenging. And then
Interesting.
it's a competitive industry as well. So it's not like salaries are super high. It's not like these long career type retention roles that exist in the fitness industry. So there is a lot of turnover that you have to manage. And I think that's a pretty consistent theme throughout the industry.
Yeah, no, I totally hear you. It's I've never really thought of it that way. I've never met a fitness trainer that I was like shocked by their price, no matter how like famous they are. Of course, the fitness gurus that get to scale, you don't really get them. But maybe you get like a junior trainer, or you like buy their ebook, and then they have like a group program or something, or an app if they have scaled, right? So it's different. But you mentioned COVID, and I remember I had a pretty particular experience hiring a fitness trainer during COVID, because that was the time when gyms were closed. Kind of a stupid time in human history where we have a health threat, so gyms are closed and McDonald's is open. But that's a conversation for another time. But I had this particular experience where this guy who used to play for Miami Dolphins was doing home fitness training for $40 an hour. And I'm like, wow, oh my God, what a price. Like, I'll never probably meet this NFL, like, you know, professional again.
Yeah,
it's such a bargain. But also it was a hard time for the industry. And, you know, even for someone like that you would consider kind of an elite athlete, right? It could be the industry could sometimes not be their friend, basically. So it's good that you are there in this industry to also help change opinions and really put a positive like contribution. So let's talk about your uncanny ways to find good hires. So we agreed to prepare 5 each, then we'll have 10 by the end of this. So tell me your first one, Sebastian. I'm so curious to hear this.
Yeah, of course. Number one for me is hiring from your members, from your client base, your membership base. So direct experience with the gym when I owned it, some of my best hires were actually people that really believed in our brand, that were coming to the gym almost every day of the week. They had experienced transformations, you know, physical transformations and beyond, right, for their own selves. And whenever we kind of pose the question, hey, we're looking to bring some people on, we need some help on the sales associate side, front desk side, and would you like a free membership, by the way? These people would jump on that opportunity, and they would be very, very good at it because they were already bought in. They already knew the workout, you know, back and forth, and they knew what the workout was capable of how it was capable of changing people. So hiring from your own membership and client base was a huge win for me.
Yeah, no, I like that. And just for our listeners, all of our advice here is not limited to the fitness space, because as you guys know, I know nothing. And I'm still trying to lose this 10 pounds that I've been trying to lose since I was 25. So I want to make that clear. But yeah, you're absolutely correct, Sebastian. Like, you can even see this in like in the coaching space. A lot of coaches, when they scale, they get junior coaches from their memberships. So some people naturally stand out and they love the program. Like you said, they're a believer in the brand. And so that's really, really powerful. It's like promoting from within kind of approach. So for me, one uncanny way to find good hire is meeting someone at a hobby that really showcases the skill that you're looking for. So I'm going to give you guys an example. My best salesperson, I befriended him through poker, by playing poker. So of course, when you're in sales, that's a lot of like psychology, a lot of patience, a lot of like really thinking ahead, right? So sometimes I feel like when I'm on a sales call and the person that I'm talking to is a little unpredictable, I genuinely feel like I'm playing high stakes poker. And so I really like that. And of course, he had great banter and he had like high EQ, and I really like that. Other hobbies could be like golf or something. You know, golf really teaches you a lot mentally. And it's also a physical and a mental challenge. And so far, I really like the people that I meet at the golf course. I definitely look at that as well. An upscale gym, a lot of people have met their even business partners training at Equinox or something like that. I also personally love hiring from the event planning, home organizing, property management world, because those, they're not necessarily hobbies, they're industries, but anything, any hobby that's kind of related to planning, organizing, like, you know, this president of your HOA or the president of the PTA or this mom who loves organizing potlucks and play dates, those are also, for me, really good signs that they're an organized person, and I like hiring from that. Have you had any experience like that, Sebastian?
Yeah, not directly hiring, but I've heard many stories of, you know, hire the people that you are familiar with, hire people that you have things in common with. And naturally, it's just going to make a better hire just because you're already closer to being on the same wavelength, right? Than finding someone you know nothing about.
Exactly. And I would say, as an additional tip, the opposite of that is hiring someone from a hobby that is not necessarily positive. Like hiring your drinking buddy, I do not advise that. It's like, you may think that you have like a friendship with this person because like you see him in this bar and you drink and you have a good time, but that doesn't really speak to their work ethic, probably even negative. And I've made that mistake before, guys. Like I thought that this girl and I had a great friendship and like I could trust her, but I realized looking back that we've only, I would say 70% of our hangouts were like drinking.
Yeah.
And that was on me for sure.
No, I've run into that too. You become, you know, social buddies with someone and you say, we should start a business together. And and then, which is a horrible mistake. The social relationship is very, very different from a business relationship. So definitely tread carefully there.
Yeah, no, I like that point. That should be emphasized and said loudly that your social relationships are not your business relationships and vice versa. You know, like you don't also have to be buddies. You don't have to invite your business partner to Thanksgiving. There's no pressure. As long as business is good, yeah, you're treating each other right. No problem. What else have for me, Sebastian?
All right. Well, I got another one, another source of great talent. This wasn't specific for the fitness industry. I've actually kind of learned this through my brokerage, business brokerage experience. So I've seen a lot of businesses, small businesses that have a lot of success hiring immigrants. All politics aside, I have seen a lot of success stories with immigrants in particular niches of businesses. So a lot of home services, even some commercial services, but for example, you know, like fence building, landscaping, things like that. I have talked to some business owners that they have expressed that their best, longest tenured employees are actually immigrants. And I think there's a couple reasons for that that we can totally talk about. You know, immigrants come from other places looking for better lives, right? Their home country situations are not very good. They are capped in opportunities in their home countries, and they're willing to come to America to work and full stop, right? They're willing to work and provide for their families, right? Which means they're not going to complain about, like, I can't work this day, the other day, I don't want to work too much, it's too hot, it's too cold. They are here for a higher purpose, which is, you know, to improve their life situation. And that's a very powerful motivator for them. And also a big benefit to the business owners to have, you know, a labor force that is motivated, that it is, they are reliable, right? So for some of these businesses that I've learned about and represented, actually, they've had a very, very good experience hiring immigrants for the reasons that I just mentioned. But would love to get kind of your thoughts on it, too.
Absolutely. I mean, you're speaking to the choir here. I'm also an immigrant. So right now I'm an immigrant of Mexico. I have a residency here. But, you know, soon enough, my husband and I will have to be in the States for a bit as a requirement also of my green card and all of that. So I definitely, you know, coming from the Philippines, which what we would consider a developing country or a poor country, you know, in quotations, I notice Filipinos in other countries, like so many Filipinos in the US and Canada, they behave differently. They're definitely more hardworking. They acknowledge the honor and the privilege that they have being, you know, in America or in Canada. They don't waste it. They also serve as usually like their family's breadwinners. So there's so many like points of motivation for them to really do well. And in the Asian culture as well, you know, you might view this as a negative, but our culture has derives a lot of other of our character around shame. And so for us, like there is like the shame of like coming home and not being able to be successful or save money. It really hurts, you know, it really hurts. It's not a very good feeling. In fact, trigger warning, some people like would commit suicide because of their depression and frustration of trying to make it in another country, their whole family depending on them, and then them not being able to like make it work, basically. So I really see that there's a different rigor coming from immigrants. And I have met so many Filipinos who were lawyers, high-end like real estate brokers who go to America or Canada and they become postmen, or like landscaping workers, or rank and file. So they are very humble. I you know, hiring humble people is amazing, right? In that trifecta of hungry, humble, smart, those three things for me are very important. So I think the humility and the willingness to work hard. And let me tell you, my first few months in America, I took a job that where I was like handing out flyers for like $200 a day. So I actually had like a job online that I was working full time, but it was pretty flexible. So I had that, and I also took side jobs to like hand out flyers or like do these other like side jobs in Las Vegas in the events industry. So I'm not proud. I don't care. I didn't care. It was good money.
That's the difference, right? You don't care. You do what you need to do to provide for you and your family. And I think maybe the family centric culture of a lot of immigrant groups is important as well. I've actually seen and hired in prior companies that I've worked, a lot of the employees will send money home across borders, right? They'll use Western Union or whatever. And that was kind of like one of the big reasons that they worked. Like they would come just to work and just to send money home. So it kind of spoke to the importance of, I'm here to take care of my family, that like, this is not just for me, right? This is for my family's welfare. And maybe that mentality is not as strong, right? In kind of stateside, you know, American coddled born people, right? It is what it is. And I also, the other point you mentioned that I resonated with is my parents actually came to the U.S. From Colombia, both of them, and they had successful careers in Colombia. My dad was an engineer. My mom was a lawyer. But when they came to the U.S. to provide opportunity for my brother and I, and my mom ended up, you know, she couldn't practice law. She would have to go through the whole law school, LSAT.
Right. Knows, it's a different. Right? Yeah. She would have totally to study different. All over again. Yeah.
So she was basically starting over again. She ended up teaching high school Spanish. And my dad was a professor at a college and at a couple different colleges, but very different from the professional careers that they had in Colombia.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. And yeah, like the same thing. It's the humility of like being able to be not even be okay with that, but to view that as a privilege, which we did. I'm sure your parents did. I did. My friends do. It's crazy. It really broke my heart. I remember this is a very vivid memory for me. My first time in Vegas, I went to this Filipino grocery store, which also had like a little food court. And the woman was asking how much the food was. And, you know, she was asking like one by one. I knew that she was asking in such a way that she would pick the cheapest one. Yeah. Like she just needed to like eat for the day. And she was even like thinking, she was like holding the line a little bit. And I just, I felt like her pain. I just know that this is because she's sending most of her money to the Philippines, to her family.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I hope that if you're listening and you have, you're Filipino, you're coming from a developing country, and you have relatives that go to Canada, America, UK, Australia, wherever the better opportunity is for you guys. Please think, do not think of them as ATMs. Their life is harder than you think, but they really do their best to send money home. So okay, my next example would be like remembering an old coworker that you really like working with. And so sometimes a lot of us change industries. Like my first business was a flower shop. Then I had an events company. I emceed for a while. I sold the flower shop as a dealership. So I did like a lot of, although it was kind of connected, it was still different businesses. But I had people that I worked with like in 2012, in 2014. And I just remember, even though I was working particular projects with them, that I had a really good experience. And so actually one friend of mine from like 2014, I approached her again this year, 10 years later, and we're now working on a project. I just remember being able to really like working with her, and it's a good experience. It's a really awesome experience so far. So don't forget the people you like working with. Do you have any similar experience?
Yeah. I mean, I hear it all the time, right? So if somebody gets a new job and they're really excited about it, and I ask them, oh, like, how did it come about? How'd you find it? They're like, oh, well, I knew someone that I went to school with, or a former coworker left the company and now he's pulling me along. That happens all the time. And we need to be conscious of that. And it's a good reminder to maintain the relationships that you really enjoyed, right? That you really liked. Because you may not see like in front of you, like what could result, but maybe down the line, a few years down the line, it could really be an opportunity to work with them again in a really interesting way.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So don't burn bridges if you guys can help it.
That's right.
There are very few bridges that I burned and they deserve to be burned. But most of it, I mean, when I was single, I always told my girlfriends that, you know, my girlfriends always asked me like, would you work with someone that you used to date or with someone that you like had one dinner with or something, like one date, it wasn't a thing. I said, yeah, totally. Because like, you know, when you're single and you're dating, 99.999% of these people are not your soulmate. But I don't know, maybe they could be your affiliate. And so they think I'm joking, but it's like, no, seriously, guys, like, why not? You know, they were a jerk and they meant well and they, you know, they respect you. So why not? So I guess that's a bonus tip. That's a bonus tip here.
I love it.
What's next on your list?
Next, I have university talent. So this one, is something that I've been doing at Barbell Jobs. One of the methods that I use to find talent is whenever somebody posts a job with us, I'll repost it to a lot of different places like fitness groups, like kind of niche communities. And one of them I've been doing is Handshake. If you're not familiar with Handshake, it's basically kind of like a talent network, talent platform for college students, university students, community college, basically out of college students looking for job opportunities. But they've worked out for at least the fitness industry, because you've got, and really, I'm not even going to limit it to the fitness industry. I think this works for any industry. When college students are on the job hunt, they are very eager to get into the workforce, right? They may not have a lot of like pickiness to them because they haven't been in the job force or in the workforce. So they're just looking for experience. They're looking for mentorship, for opportunities. They just want to get their feet wet. So as a business, you know, you should really capitalize on this energy, right? This desire, right? So so Handshake is actually a great platform, but I mean, don't limit yourself to that platform. You can go directly to university job boards. You can search for students that are graduating on LinkedIn and other platforms. I think that's a great source of talent.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I love hiring university talent because I remember when I was young and I had, like you said, a lot of energy. I would play poker until like 5 a.m. and then go home, sleep for 1 hour, literally. I would shower and I would go to my 8 a.m. job and I had no problem. I had, so just for the energy part, guys, you know, you can really like you can really take advantage of that. And then I think the other angle to that too is when you graduate from university, your resume is basically empty. You know,
Yeah.
like when I graduated, I was the president of the debate team, fucking nerd, and like I won this like table tennis competition, very nerdy, but. These companies kind of don't care about that. They don't
Yeah,
care. They don't care. They
exactly.
don't need a public speaker to sell their, I don't know, like hot dogs or something.
Yeah.
So I needed something professional. And so I was really willing to prove myself. So that's also
Yeah.
another like carrot you can dangle as an employer.
Totally. I love it.
Yeah. Number three for me would be the gym or any hobby that really emphasizes discipline. So I know obviously you're in the industry, Sebastian, but like for me, I admire people that work out all the time, or like, you know, they play tennis, like they have a particular, or even people that meditate a lot and they are really like, they do that every day. I like that because diligence is more important to me than intelligence, because diligence, there's a lot of things that go into that, like attention to detail, persistence, hard work, and I really value that as a virtue. So
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, what came to mind when you were saying that was that there's a saying, I'll probably butcher it, but it's, if you want to get something done, give it to a busy person, right? Like they'll get it done. So what made me think of that is, you know, the people that work out at 5 a.m. every day because that's their only time to get a workout in, and
True.
they're super disciplined about it and they don't miss a day. Like those are dialed in people. Like you can count on them to
True.
get something done, rather than just kind of like, you know, the person that just kind of floats by, right? They don't have like a rigorous
Yeah.
schedule or agenda, and frankly just kind of lack discipline. So I love the point that you made on just like the discipline related hobbies. I think is a good place to find people that are generally high performers.
Yeah, I mean, like I learned how to play the piano last year for the first time, and oh my God, the discipline that I needed to like read notes, I was like, oh my God, why am I doing this to myself?
Yeah.
Like I have to play at least an hour a day, and you know, and then I stopped, and now I felt like I lost it. And so
Yeah.
now I think of these people who have music as their hobby, and it's really their regular hobby. And I'm like, you know what? That's really admirable. So I have that in mind. Like it's a plus if they have
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
you know,
For
musical
sure.
hobby or something. Or even like I have friends who are on Duolingo like every day. They would have like 3,000 day streak or something like that.
Yeah,
And I'm
yeah,
like, that's
yeah.
kind of impressive. Like,
Yeah.
you've never been to France and you speak French now. So like it's kind of impressive.
I need to check my Duolingo streak right now. I'm like over 1,100 days, but
For what
humble
language?
brag. For German, actually.
What? That's
Which is
insane.
ridiculously hard. I'm
It
so frustrated by that language.
is. Why? Is it so you can intimidate your applicants to just
Yeah,
yell at
that's
them in
true.
German?
Yeah.
Like you your PR, like
Yeah,
when you yell
exactly.
something German when you're doing your PR.
It's such a harsh language. It's true. But no,
Really?
like the actual reason is actually my last name is German.
Ooh.
And
Oh,
my
yeah.
whole family lineage is my great grandfather immigrated to Colombia from Germany. And a couple of years ago, actually, I went through the process of like, if you prove your lineage, like if you find the documentation and everything like that, you can actually claim German citizenship. So I did that a couple of years ago.
Oh, interesting.
Which is cool. I have an EU passport. I haven't really used it, but so I'm trying to learn German just so I'm not that much of a fraud.
Yeah, you can also show them like your Facebook memories and how many Oktoberfests you have
Yeah.
attended. Maybe that will help.
That's true. That's true.
Okay. So what's next on your list?
I got number four for me is something that I've never explored, but I feel like it's worth touching on, and it's ex-convicts. So I think this is kind of maybe similar on a similar vein as immigrants, just because of the motivations underlying, right? So when it
Yeah.
comes to ex-convicts, that generally, they are a population that gets overlooked by the job market, right? People just kind of get turned off by it. You know, somebody made a bad decision, they made a bad choice, and they kind of pay for it the rest of their lives, unfortunately. But I think the reality is a lot of these people, they're looking for a new opportunity on life, right? They're looking to reprove themselves, which to me, that means they're not gonna complain. They're gonna do what they are asked and beyond. They're really trying to prove themselves, right? So I think in theory, they would make a really, really strong employee in a lot of cases. And I'll also say that you know, ex-convict doesn't mean you're hiring murderers, right? Like it means that maybe someone that was caught with some pot, right? Like a couple of years ago. So ex-convict doesn't mean a bad person by any stretch. It's just they've been given a negative stigma by society that's very unfortunate. So they are, you know, they are more than willing to put in the work to get back and be productive and kind of rebuild their name. Exactly. What are your thoughts?
Exactly. No, actually, I have mixed feelings about that, to be honest. But because I've worked with people that I really thought that, you know, that having a previous like run in with the law would like teach them or it would give them something to prove, but unfortunately it didn't work. But I think like what you said, I think the nuance is like what was the crime that they committed, right? And so there's really like there's fine print to it. Like, you know, when they were young or like things like that. Like I have a friend who was in jail because he jumped at a railroad or something. And I think that was like illegal in Canada. And so that's now on his record. So not, you know, obviously I wouldn't call him like an ex-convict or something, but now he has a record, right? And he was a kid and they were just like playing and being funny, like jumping on like the railroad, like things like that. But of course, like I think the red flags would be like fraud, embezzlement, you know, assaulting a murder weapon, rape, obviously, like that's a different conversation. You know, if this is like shoplifting and they were 14, like I'd probably be cool with that, you know, no problem. So lead with a lot of consideration, I would say. But yeah, you're correct. I think that a lot of ex-convicts, especially parents, ex-convicts who are parents, because they also want to prove themselves to their child. They don't want to be remembered by their child as like, you know, an ex-convict. They really have a motivation to turn things around.
Oh yeah, no, that's a really good point. And honestly, like if they're looking for that opportunity and I think they could be very, very loyal to an employer as well.
Exactly.
For those reasons.
Exactly. Because also coming out of prison, there are limited opportunities, right? Like some of these people would just like flip burgers because it's really all the, you know, the only place that would take them.
Yeah.
So if you give them a better opportunity than that, very likely they will appreciate it.
That's right. I agree.
Okay. Next on my list, it might be something that a lot of people will disagree with, but I actually really like hiring people related to the people that I already have. And so we have this term called nepotism, right? Which has like a negative rap. And it is because they think that the people who got these jobs had it easy and the process was not totally meritocratic. So my answer to that is try to keep the process as meritocratic as possible. Like, for example, my HR person asked me if her sister could apply to this job. So obviously she's in HR. She can't interview her own sister. Yeah. So I told her, yes, but stay away from the hiring process and we're going to be objective. So her sister went through the operations manager and final interview with me. And she was actually really good. So I've also had bad experience with nepotism. And so I'm not saying that it's foolproof, but for me, when done right, it has its merits because they care more about your company. And then they also they can also like kind of look out for each other. Like I've had sisters or cousins that if one person was absent because they're sick, their sister would actually like try to take on the job just so it's not embarrassing or something like that to help their sister out. And I really appreciate that. What's your experience with this?
Yeah, when brokering businesses, when I get to know certain small businesses, sometimes you realize that they got their whole family working behind the counter. And this is actually common in restaurants in particular. I'm sure there's certainly others, but you know, on a surface level, it makes sense, right? You know your family, you trust your family. Mm-hmm. You can actually be very direct with them, right? And you don't have to skirt around like I don't know, just kind of corporate-y, like performance improvement plan. You say, no, brother, like get your stuff together.
Yeah.
That kind of made me think of The Bear, actually. If you've seen The Bear on Hulu, it's basically kind of like a part of it is a family and they are very, very rude to each other.
Really?
But no, going back to the point, I think it can certainly work. I agree with you. There's the nepotism conversation that it does cause a lot of frustration in the workplace, just because there are people that get preference over others. Mm-hmm. So it is important to have to maintain a meritocracy, right?
Mm-hmm.
As best you can.
Yeah.
And I know people are still probably going to say yes, but that's still your brother, your cousin. And there's nothing we can do about that. But if we keep like the hiring process consistent and the same, then that's one way you can try to dispel the stigma. But the fact is, you know, your family could still make great hires. And ultimately, at the end of the day, we just want a great hire that can help advance our business.
Exactly. No, I totally agree with you. And it's also more, I guess it's all, it also like undeniably gives you more opportunity or incentive to really make your hiring process bulletproof, right? It's like, and let's remember, guys, that favoritism doesn't only happen in nepotism. We favor people who are like us, talk like us, look like us, went to the same school. Favoritism can happen in so many ways. Like mm-hmm. you are like my mastermind, you know, friend. And if it's between you and five other people, I'll pick you, even though we're not related, you know what
I
mean?
Of course.
So there's still that favoritism can exist in so many ways. And some of us are even super unconscious about it. And so I think the incentive here is to really build your hiring system so that it is super objective, whatever happens. Do you have resources? I'm just curious, at Barbell Jobs, to help them out with this, or do you provide consulting if a company in the fitness space needs it?
With regards to,
like maybe, oh, you know what, Sebastian, I can't hire because I think that my onboarding is broken, or I'm not sure if this is the correct role.
Yeah, we that is kind of like future roadmap, right? Mm. So I think there's an opportunity to definitely improve hiring processes and help people with their hiring processes. Right now, kind of the infrastructure that we have is just best practices. Mm. We have a couple resources of like how to structure your job post,
nice.
What information to include.
Nice.
So we have kind of like a 1.0 version of it, but I think you're right. I think this could be a very valuable resource kind of down the line in terms of let's look at your hiring process. Let's find out kind of where it has holes and let's find out kind of where we can optimize it.
Yeah, and honestly, I think this podcast will even be a good resource for them to just really open their eyes on the possibilities, you know, before they go on your job board and they make these decisions.
Yeah.
There's on the other side of this is there could be a lot of people like applying for a job because of how, like what you said about the industry, how kind of fleeting it is, and how pay is kind of a pay can ease difference in pay can easily move
That's
the
right,
needle,
exactly.
Right? Like if I have a $40 an hour job and there's this posting, job posting that pays 75, well, I'll just do that.
No question. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
What's the last point on your list?
All right. Last one I have is temporary labor or freelancers.
Freelancers.
So I don't have extensive experience here, but here's some observations that I've made. So for example, I had to get some work done at my house. I use I used TaskRabbit for the first time.
I love TaskRabbit. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm actually kind of a new user. So I'm like, wow, I've been missing out for years.
Yes.
But I had some work to be done on the house. So just kind of like general handyman work.
Yeah.
The first tasker that came, like, very personable, very knowledgeable, knew what he was doing. You know, I don't think TaskRabbit would probably be mad, but I don't think there's anything stopping you from saying, hey, by the way, I have another project coming up, or maybe, you know, maybe you have the business already, right? You say, oh, I have a small business that does XYZ. Would you be interested in either starting part-time or could potentially turn into full-time? Because you already got the demo, right? You already got the taste of,
right,
what this person
is. Trial.
Yeah, you got the free trial. Well, not free, but you got the trial.
The $30 trial. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So you know kind of like their customer service skills, you know, yeah, their physical abilities, like to be able to do the work. So right, that's a really interesting way to like test talent before, like outside of a formal interview. And then to that point, you know, I hired another tasker. I think that's what they call him, right? Tasker. Mm-hmm. I hired another tasker for a different job, and he wasn't that great. So, you know, no need to follow up with him, right? Like,
right,
you're able to through TaskRabbit or through whatever platform, you're able, yeah, to sample a lot of different people and then, you know, approach the people that are really high performers and high quality, because they might be great assets for your business.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I like that idea, because I'm a big user of TaskRabbit when I moved to the States, because I moved alone and I can't even put an IKEA table together. So yeah, obviously my, you know, TaskRabbit was my best friend.
Yeah.
And it was nice. Yeah, it definitely exposed me to some really good professionals and not so good, yeah, professionals. So I don't think that TaskRabbit will be mad if you say, you know, you can just like have a side conversation with them. Because my point is, like, I have had a negative experience also with a tasker. Like, now because he has my number, he started like asking me out on a date.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
And then I felt unsafe because this guy has been in my house. This guy knows where I live.
Yeah.
So I really felt, because he was like putting my desk together. So this guy was in my house. You know, I felt like a little scared.
Yeah.
And looking back, I should have reported it, but I was just like, you know, I was new to the place and whatever. Mm-hmm. But well, the online version of this is Fiverr, right?
Yeah.
Going on Fiverr, going
totally
on Upwork. But of course, as an outsourcing professional, we have a full guarantee on the work of our team. If you're not happy on the first month, we do a rehire or a money back. But so, but other outsourcing companies might not offer that. So I'm not going to pretend and like, don't go to Upwork, come with me. But like, yeah, actually picking people on Upwork or Fiverr and hiring them for a small job also gives you an experience of how prompt they are and how good their work is. So I totally support that. And of course, like, I think most freelancers would prefer a consistent gig, right?
Yeah.
Instead of trying to find.
You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
exactly,
it works,
yeah,
for them. Yeah, it works,
yeah,
for them too.
If you're a great employer, you pay on time, you give clear directions, like you mm-hmm. provide opportunity, like mm-hmm. why wouldn't they continue to work for you, you know?
Exactly.
They probably have similar thoughts in terms of preferences, right, on who's a good hiring manager, who's a good,
yeah,
employer.
Yeah.
So if there's a good match between, you know, a worker and an employer, I run with it, right? You know,
yeah,
take advantage.
Exactly. Exactly. Because, you know, most people will still prefer that consistent thing. And, you know, these,
yeah,
platforms, Upwork, Fiverr, TaskRabbit, you're kind of waiting around for a gig. And sometimes you have to reduce your price to get a gig. So it's really not a consistent source of income.
Mm-hmm.
For them. So I bet they will prefer something more regular.
Yeah.
The last on my list are ex or former entrepreneurs that have been scammed or had a bad experience with MLMs.
Mm-hmm.
And so MLMs or multi-level marketing, some people call it direct marketing. I think those are two different things actually. Or some of them are Ponzi schemes, and
yeah,
some of them are pyramid schemes or Ponzi schemes or whatever you call them. They pretend to sell a product, but it's super overpriced, and they actually pay you a commission for memberships or have a required amount of purchase so that you can continue to be in business. And I mean, I have mixed feelings with MLMs because I also do think that, especially in developing countries, sometimes it's really some families like only ticket to get out of poverty. So I'm not totally saying they're a bad thing, but I say scammed or former like had a bad experience with MLMs because sometimes it depends on their upline or who brought them in that MLM, and sometimes they have a bad experience. So for me, I like hiring those people because they are not like totally hopeless. And the fact that they try to have a business shows me that they can do more and that they can be optimistic when given the right situation. So what's your experience with MLMs or former MLM people, Sebastian? Do you have any?
Not direct experience hiring them, but I like all the points that you brought up. I think my thought on people that have been in MLMs is that they actually have they can grind, right? Like they have that gritty gear of just like, you got to pick up the phone and call, you got to put yourself out there, you got to be vulnerable, right? When selling something, those are actually great qualities to have.
Yeah.
And maybe if you can rechannel them into a productive business, you know, into a business that rewards them, it doesn't rely on a pyramid, essentially. They might be in a great position to thrive because they have that disposition that they use just in the wrong structure, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And one of the hardest positions to hire is an operations manager or a CEO. And so these people, you know, when you find the right people, I think they could really work well because of everything that you talked about. Some MLMs monthly quota is insane. It's literally like, if I had that quota, I don't even know how to sell, but sometimes they would like make it work for 3 months. And like, how did you do that? You know, it's just grit. It's like not being afraid to show up. And like you said, those are really, really good qualities that was just kind of wasted in a different channel.
Totally.
So yeah, well, this has been a super awesome, Sebastian. For those who are listening, the website is barbelljobs.com. If you have, you know, any friends or if you're looking to hire talent in the industry, definitely visit that. And of course, Sebastian is also a licensed business broker. So if you're curious about anything, if you need expert advice, how can they find you? How can they talk to you? Or how can they connect?
Yeah, I'm on the different, I'm on all the social platforms. I am on the social platforms through barbelljobs.com as well. Basically everything funnels through me. I'm not a very good business owner because I have my hands in everything. Yeah, especially on the brokerage side, I literally got into it because I love talking about small businesses. I love learning about them, the people behind them. So, you know, happy to workshop, to answer questions, to bounce ideas off of. Even if selling a business is not even in your plan, you know, would love to still, you know, learn about your business and kind of what you're doing to grow it. It's just, that's literally my hobby. It's I wouldn't call it a job. It's truly my hobby. So, so please reach out.
Oh, I love that. Okay. I'm going to link two of Sebastian's social media so that you guys are not overwhelmed and you can stop stalking him on the show notes, and also visit barbelljobs.com and feel free to share it to all of your friends at the gym, your friends are looking for great gigs and your friends who are looking for great talent. This is a very special industry and you really need someone who knows the ins and outs of it. So definitely follow Sebastian. Thank you so much for hanging out with me. I'm super excited to see you in one of the DC events.
Yeah, this was awesome, Carla. I enjoyed the conversation and the time just flies by. And
I know.
And yeah, really, really enjoyed it.
Likewise. All right. Thank you, guys. And I'll see you for the next episode of None of Your Business. Bye.
So it's a wrap. To my entrepreneur friends, I hope that you found this episode interesting and enjoyable. I know I did. Big thanks to our sponsor, Proximity Outsourcing, for making this possible. If you need to outsource anything in your business so you can scale fast and easy, visit proximityoutsourcing.com and check out their solutions. If there's any topic that you want to request, feel free to reach out. I only have two conditions. You tell me why you find it interesting, and you promise it's not business talk. Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube, and leave us a comment or review because you're cool like that. This is your host, Carla, and thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for your interest in fun stories. Now we can get back to business. See you next week. And remember, everything here is none of your business.